PC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, my boss.
Fan of Breakfast Club.
Yeah, baby. I met Judd Nelson this weekend. He came to one of my shows, Will. You know, the guy from Breakfast Club.
Which guy?
I think his name's Booker in Breakfast Club. He's the bad guy. Boy, the tough guy.
Oh, cool. Yeah. You met him?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then I was dumb and got into a guns discussion with him. I mean, why?
You are over gun rights?
What kind of topic is that?
I don't know. God. I was nervous. I was nervous.
And you probably brought it up, and you know nothing about that.
Yeah,
I'm just like,
okay.
Jesus, let's talk about it.
Oh, yeah. So, but, and that to the left is Will Schmidt, hottie patati.
Hello, Will Schmidt.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm glad we have you here.
Man of many words.
I'm glad we have you here while the topic of the show is guns.
Yeah. That's our topic.
What else
today?
Should we talk about? Police brutality.
We can talk about. We don't know anything
about
religion.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
Okay, so today we have a fun show. Well, I hope it's fun. It's going to be fun for us. You may not like it. But Tony receives all these questions, asks Tony questions, and we let them accumulate, pile up until we have so many we don't know what to do with, and then we have a show. And so he's taking some of those questions today. So if you guys have been like, where the heck is the answer to my question?
Here it is.
I've been waiting every single show.
And we'll try to do this a lot more now. And if you guys have questions, you can go to kickitinthenuts.com. And there's like an Ask Effin' Tony link at the top. You can click on that. And there's a form where you can submit a question. Just ask it up.
Yep. Although I've been asking for a topic for a couple of weeks now, and I haven't gotten my way, so.
Obviously, some of these folks took more than a couple of weeks to get theirs, too, we're right on point.
Exactly. So, okay. So, if you haven't liked us yet on Facebook, then you're the only person in America who hasn't. So, go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we usually post all of our, we do post all of our topics that we'll be doing on the future shows episodes. And you guys can ask questions. Or anything you want us to cover in the future.
And that's what we'll do. We do what we're told.
Exactly. So, anywho, what's up?
Let's do the show, I guess.
We're doing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do some questions.
Okay, let's see here. Where are my questions? Anne from Covington, Georgia. I am a 57-year-old female and have completed 10 weeks of the fat loss course and have been listening to as many of your podcasts that I can. I've lost at least 10 pounds.
Woo-woo, way to go, Ann.
Yeah, I'm having to use a belt to keep my pants up. Uh-huh. I'm doing my self-testing. My BP is typically around 118 over 74, saliva pH 7.0, urine pH 5.5, breath rate has varied from 13 to 17, hold rate around 35 to 40. I've been taking 2 beat flow, 2 digestazyme, and 5 HCL for a month. I still burp a little and experience some bloating as my day progresses. I poop every other day, and it is dark, but hard and compacted. I have been drinking at least 2 liters of water each day. According to the course, should I be concerned about bad critters? And if so, what should I do? I have been hearing the word heartburn-free in the podcast. Is this an option I should try? Wow, she's only pooping every other day.
Yeah, I don't want you to do that, Anne. I want you to poop like all the cool kids poop. We poop once, you know, every other day.
At least once a day.
At least once a day.
I gotta poop right now.
Right, but we're gonna pause till the end of the show, and so that's important because you're gonna have a harder time continuing to lose weight if you're not pooping every day because your body wants to get rid of waste. That's kind of a big deal to do that. So. If you're using 5-HCL per meal and you're still feeling a little bit of bloating towards the end of the day, it could be a situation where, yeah, you could have some bacteria in your stomach that is the waste from the bacteria is kind of alkalizing the stomach. And so maybe that 5-HCL is not acidifying the stomach like 5-HCL normally would. What do you think of that, Will?
Yeah, I think that's one thing. I don't think that she should take more than 5-HCL. We don't really recommend
that.
Yeah,
we never tell people to do that.
Yeah, because the 5-HCL is approximately the amount of HCL that like a healthy stomach should make when eating a good-sized serving of protein. So heartburn-free might be a good move, There's other things that we sometimes use, like Swedish bitters can sometimes be a good call. They're also antimicrobial. And other natural foods like raw carrot and bamboo shoot, also natural antimicrobial, really gentle, harmonious chemicals that are embedded in those foods that could also help clean out the stomach and the intestinal tract. And then you might also want to look at, like, are you eating other foods that that are generally hard to digest and causing bloating? Like, are you eating beans? Are you eating grains still in your diet? We're clear, like, you're aware of what the program is, but are you still including...
Are you actually listening to
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Are you still including any other foods? Like, I still have a couple pieces of bread with dinner because you got to have bread, right? Like, I don't know if you're still doing
it's
that
or not. It's not a meal if you don't have bread.
Right, yeah. So just thinking of when I was trying to get my dad to change his diet, like the stuff that he wouldn't call a legitimate meal without. Anyway, there's still maybe some problematic fibers. So a couple things is try cutting out certain... food groups that may be triggering it and see if that fixes it, like leaving out grains or beans, legumes, that kind of stuff. And then also even in the realm of like low starch vegetables and fruits, there may still be some fibers that give you issues. So try cooking a vegetable. If you've been eating it raw and you're feeling bloating, like try cooking and see if that cooking helps break down a fiber that might be giving you problems. But you don't want there to be burping and bloating. And these other ways of some other antimicrobial foods you consume and also minding what kinds of other fibers that you're eating can help clear out the gut. And you don't want those in there, not only because it's uncomfortable to be bloating, but also because that's endotoxins that they're producing and that's getting in the way of your cells' metabolism and your overall health and your weight loss.
Right. And keep in mind that the more alkaline that stool is leaning towards, the slower it's going to move, and that could be part of what's plugging you up a little bit. On the other end of that, it could be just the fact that you're not pooping every day that could be making you feel a little bloated and kind of carrying an extra load a little bit. So if you can improve that aspect, that may help a little bit too, just to move out the garbage. And your blood pressure is not high. You may be able to get away with using a little of the concentrate mineral drops that... they have a lot of magnesium in it, and that can help the body push more water to the bowels, and so that you can help that stool move, and it's not so hard and compacted, like you're
what
saying.
What about a colonic?
A colonic, you know, kind of cleans out what's in there, but it doesn't really fix constipation at all. I used to talk to girls that was how they pooped, was to go get a colonic,
because
they
couldn't
do anything else. Yeah, it's expensive. That's an expensive poop. But... you know, that could be one thing. But yeah, the heartburn free could help, you know, wipe out a few layers of that bacteria at least, so that the stomach can reach its full potential of acidity. And we even have been using D-limonene, which is from Yarrow. And it's the exact same thing as the heartburn free. And it's cheaper. So you could do that route too. But keep an eye on those things, and you know, it may not be one of those things. It may be a combination of continuing to improve what you're improving until you can wipe out enough bacteria that it's not causing a problem anymore.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jan, I noticed that L-taurine and L-glutamine are part of the ingredients of beet flow. The ingredients are listed as contraindicated in several of the imbalances. If digestive issues are present, should you focus on correcting the digestive issues using the beet flow, regardless of whether your test results indicate other imbalances where these two ingredients would be avoided? It seemed like the digestive issues sort of trumped everything else. I would appreciate some clarification on this. Thanks.
Yeah, so I've talked to a lot of people about this, including the makers of the supplement and some other practitioners that we talk with a lot. And it turns out that the amount of those ingredients that are in there are so inconsequential that they're not going to push an imbalance.
Why do they even
one
put it
the
in
other.
There then?
So they're used as kind of like a binder and something to help stick it together and help everything function correctly without... actually having to use all those binders that are just garbage and junk. So there are some aspects of those that can be beneficial with BioFlow as well. So that was another reason to include some of them. But they don't seem to be enough to create a problem. Now, here's something that you have to think about, though, is that glutamine can cause someone to be more constipated if they're already leaning that direction. So I've had clients that have taken Beet Flow and they got constipated, and we thought, oh, well, it has glutamine in there, so maybe that's causing the constipation. But if you think about what Beet Flow is doing, is it's helping bile to flow better. So if somebody is right on that fence of leaning towards constipation because they don't have enough stomach acid, when you improve bile flow, that stool is going to become more alkaline, and now the stool slows down and they get more constipated. So we found that with these clients, that once they improved their stomach acid levels, they were able to use Beet Flow and it didn't create any more constipation from them, even though they were leaning a little more anabolic, and glutamine can push somebody more anabolic. So you're looking at things correctly. You're doing it right by saying, okay, I'm looking at these imbalances and these things are contraindicated. But in that particular supplement, the amount of the contents that are in there are so inconsequential that it's really not going to cause that much of a problem. Do you have anything to add to that, Will Schmidt?
I think you're right. Like when we do like doses of glutamine, it's usually like 10 grams.
Right.
Which is, I don't even know. Do we know how many milligrams of glutamine are in like a capsule of Beet Flow?
It's like, well, if you look at I think 5 grams is a heaping teaspoon of glutamine.
Yeah.
So if you look at it that way, the amount that's in there is very, it's not even enough to be listed into the milligram contents. It's in the actual proprietary blend of,
yeah,
this is a little bit in there kind of thing.
It's definitely an inconsequentially small amount of that amino acid, if that's the case, because when we do servings or doses of glutamine, it's usually like 5 to 10 grams, which would be like a couple bottles of Beet Flow. So
right.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
So, and I think we're double Beet Flowing questions.
All right. Joy from St. Thomas. Beet Flow contains betaine HCl, and the betaine HCl is derived from beets. If I remember right, the digestive enzymes also contain betaine HCl. Do I really need to take the separate betaine HCl? Is it betaine or betaine? I don't know.
I say betaine.
You say betaine, I say betaine.
British or...
right, or drunk.
Tomato.
Depends if you're drunk or not. Yeah, so this is a similar thing. So if you're talking about digestazyme, it has a small amount of HCl in there. It's like 100 milligrams, which is a really small amount when you consider that most people need to work up to 5 capsules of the pure HCl per meal to digest correctly. So each of those capsules is how much, Will? It's like
500 milligrams.
Yeah, so it's somewhere around there.
So there's 1/10 of a milligram in capsule, or maybe 2 capsules of digestazyme, 1 or 2, I don't know, but it's 1/10 of a milligram of HCl, and you get like a regular dose of HCl for just 1 capsule is 500 milligrams, and we usually have people take like 4 or 5 of those.
So you confuse me, I'm not sure. I know it's 100 milligrams in digestazyme.
Very small amount, right, so that's 1/10 of a gram, and we usually have people take like 2.5 grams, so it's like the equivalent of 25 digestazyme, which you don't want to take, because that many enzymes will make you feel not good.
Right, and it could like, you could like be deteriorating tissue and stuff like that.
You'll just dissolve molecularly.
But here's the goal is with the digestazyme. Here's why they had that in there, is they just put a small amount. Plus, do you want to explain some of the cofactors that help us, you know, create our own HCl?
Yeah. So they've got other things that help the body, or help the stomach specifically, have the right environment for HCl to be activated, and also other ingredients that our body uses in the process of making hydrochloric acid. So
like zinc, stuff like
that. Yeah, like zinc picolinate and stuff. So that's useful for building up our own production of HCl. It's a lot of people have a good concern of like, do I have to be on this forever? And the answer is no. The better that we get the stomach working, and the more we have it have all of the cofactors it needs to do its job, the less it will need to depend on HCl supplementation.
Right. And another thing is, you were talking about Beet Flow contains betaine HCl, but and it's derived from beets, and so is the actual HCl, but they're very different. They're actually polar opposites. So don't view Beet Flow like that's going to acidify your stomach. It absolutely is not in any way whatsoever done. So don't view it that way. But When people use Digestizyme with that small amount of HCL and all those cofactors to help you make your own HCL, that actually could be enough HCL for some people that are just need a little boost of hardly anything.
Is she talking about Digestizyme, or is she talking about digestive enzymes?
Well, I feel like she's talking about Digestizyme because she's talking about that there's HCL in it. And normal enzymes do not normally contain betaine.
Not bad. They weren't asking Kenna.
There are some that put HCL in there, but there's also some that put ox bile in the enzyme too, and you don't want that at the same time. But anyways, the goal is that someone uses Digestizyme and they also use the betaine HCL and they build up to the full dose so that they're properly digesting food. And as the body starts to create their own HCL, they can start to reduce the betaine HCL amount that they're taking. And hopefully the person ends up making it on their own. And maybe just a small amount in the Digestizyme is enough to carry them through and they don't need those betaine HCL capsules anymore. And we find that that works for about maybe half the people. I see probably half the people that need to continue using HCL much longer than that for one reason or another.
Yeah, and what's really awesome about digestive supplements is that they really can help break the cycle of depletion. Because when your digestion's weak, you can eat a great diet, but it doesn't really matter because you're not getting the nutrients out of it. So then you stay perpetuated not only in the body chemistry imbalances, but also in the weak digestion. So when you give yourself the supplements, you can get out of that and that vicious cycle by enabling your body to get more of the nutrition that it needs so that then it can make more of its own digestive juices better. And that's also kind of an answer to a question we get a lot of times. How long do I have to take these supplements? Like, well, as you correct your body chemistry imbalances, you'll make more of your own stomach acid, you'll make more of your own enzymes, you'll make more of the right the intestinal flora, and your bile will also have a better consistency naturally the more you correct these imbalances. Because it's really, a lot of times, it's the imbalances that are creating the problems with the digestive system. But also the digestive system problems are perpetuating the body chemistry imbalances. So if we can help get ourselves out of that cycle and then correct the imbalances, like, for example, someone who's electrolyte deficient or low blood pressure often doesn't have enough chloride to make hydrochloric acid. So when we supplement with the digestive supplements, get their blood pressure up, now they have the chloride they need to make hydrochloric acid, and then they don't need to take it much longer.
Right, and you have to listen to your body. And I hear from a lot of people that will have all of these symptoms like constipation, bloating, horrible pain every time they eat. It's just this discomfort. Or even bile flow issues, like loose stool, all this stuff. So they take the supplements and they see all this huge improvement. And then they stop taking the supplements and all the problems come back. And they say, hey, I have all the problems again. And I'm like, well, are you still taking the supplements? And I'm like, no, I fixed it with those. But so I stopped. Yeah. And when it all comes back, that means that you didn't fix enough. And that those supplements were almost acting like a crutch for you. And they were helping your body function like it should, but you were still using that assistance. And you clearly still need that assistance. So you also have to look at the fact that, what you're eating is contributing to how bad those issues are currently for you, as well as the imbalances. So especially with like bile flow, if you take a lot of beet flow or take other steps to improve bile flow, but then you reduce that and you're still eating all these processed foods or even a lot of grains and other things that seem to thicken the bile. Or maybe you're overly catabolic and your body's breaking down all the time and so you're thickening the bile that way. There's a lot of different aspects of what you could be doing in your life that is working against you at the same time that the supplements are working in your favor. And all of those factors kind of let you dictate, okay, how long do I need these? So it's a hard question to answer, but if you listen to your body and just try reducing the supplements a little bit at a time, seeing how you do, hey, I'm still doing great. Maybe I can reduce even further. And until the symptoms start coming back, then you know, okay, I reduced too much. I should go up a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's where it really matters in understanding what each supplement does and what the different digestive symptoms that you experience are that correlate to like which issues. So like the burping and bloating, like that's in the upper abdomen, that's a stomach acid issue. And if you're not aware of that, if you think, oh, I just need to keep working on my bile, so let's keep taking beet flow, you're not going to connect the dots and understand, oh, I've got to focus on stomach acid levels, and beet flow doesn't address that. So it's important that you're intelligent with the usage.
Right, and even Digestizyme, if you were using that, which addresses stomach acid a little bit, but if your stomach has hardly any acid, it's not going to address it enough, and you're going to think the problem is, oh, it must be something else, but you just were not aggressive enough and you took the right steps.
Yeah, so we have a free digestive issues course at kickingthenuts.com, /courses. So if you're needing a review of like, what digestive symptoms how do I understand them, and then how do I work to correct those specific ones, you can go through the free course to get the nuances of that. And then know that your body is individual, and it's going to have its own pace and its own time that it needs support at different amounts. So the more you can get familiar with, you know, what your body's telling you symptomatically, energetically, digestively, the more you're going to be able to stay in the moment with it and give it what it needs at the appropriate amounts. So like that process of weaning off may happen really smoothly and like a steady linear progression for some people, and other people may plateau for a long time. But if they're paying attention and they understand, you know, how their body's reacting to different things, then they'll be able to self-pace it correctly and give them body what they need as they need it.
Right. And whatever the issue was that maybe restricted your body from making the proper HCL, those causes vary greatly. And some of them are as simple as the person doesn't have enough resources. You put the resources in there, all of a sudden they make an HCL and it's awesome. Like, we've seen people fix their HCL just by using sea salt. But there are other factors, including things like H. pylori or using a PPI that turns it off, and then that drug is in your fat cells, and if you start to lose weight, it kind of comes out, and then it's almost like you're using that drug again. So, but there are also other factors that we don't really understand that for some people seem to be restricting their ability to make HCL. Why?
Footsie with me for a second.
Okay. Stretching.
You looked at me weird, and when I said I didn't understand, but I don't understand most things.
Right.
Yeah.
He was scared. I touched your phone.
Oh no.
Okay.
And I did. Okay. So, Gene, I read that if my gallbladder has been removed, I can simulate bile action with ox bile supplements. In this case, I was thinking I would not use beet flow. Is this correct? No.
It can be correct, but I think Ken is kind of right when she says no. Way to go.
She took the course.
Yay. Yeah. When she gets something right, she gets to play footsie.
Yeah, that's the new rule. That's my
rule. Okay, so, you know, this is an interesting topic. And in the four-week course, we do have a whole page for people that have lost their gallbladder, or maybe you're not producing enough bile for one reason or another, which is kind of rare if you still have your gallbladder. But we kind of talk about this a lot, and for the most part, using the ox bile is the correct step, and you're likely going to have to do that forever because the gallbladder is gone if you want to create proper digestion. However, there's an issue of, if you've lost your gallbladder, the likely scenario is that you lost it because bile was backed up. It was not flowing. You created stones in the gallbladder and it wasn't moving, and so they yanked it out. But a lot of times that blockage doesn't just happen in the gallbladder. It happens in the biliary pathway too. And so people will lose their gallbladder. They'll have it cut out and they still have like these phantom gallbladder attacks. Like they have these horrible attacks. And the reality is that it's that the biliary pathway is still blocked. And so things can't flow. And even though you can't accumulate enough bile to digest correctly, that bile from the liver is still an exit strategy for toxins. Do you want to explain that, Will Schmidt?
Yeah, the liver is still making bile, and it's still secreting it out. It's just, there's not like a big pool reservoir for it to build up and concentrate in like we like it to, because the gallbladder's been removed. But the liver's still doing its thing. You know, it's still secreting out bile. And we still need to help that happen. And it's not going to have the power and punch that we would want it to really digest food and emulsify fats potently and neutralize the acid from the stomach. So ox bile is appropriate, but we do still eliminate a bunch of toxic waste all the time out through the bile, and that needs to keep happening. And yeah, like you said, if you're a person who had their gallbladder removed, it's most likely the case that your bile is really crystallized and sludgy. So the bead flow will help facilitate that bile to have a more liquid, fluid nature. So we want to help that happen, and it's a good idea to keep taking it as long as you need to keep other signs and symptoms of good bile flow present. So you shouldn't be having those gallbladder pains still. And if you are, it's a sign that you probably have this sludgy bile still.
Right. So you're right, Gene, in the fact that the bead flow may not be as beneficial towards digestion as it would be for someone else, but you still want that detoxification pathway moved. And we have heard from other people in a similar situation where they used bead flow in the beginning, and maybe they did a bead flow flush or two and got things moving so waste could be removed, and then they didn't have to use bead flow as much as they continued through, and they focused more on the ox bile.
Josh, my wife is having difficulty swallowing and tightness in her throat. She is getting headaches, etc. Seems like it could be GERD. The doctor recommended a barium swallow test. Lots of dollar signs. However, even if it proves our point, it will be managed with diet. She eats fairly healthy and is a triathlete. It affects her moods, etc., which is why I'm reaching out. Ha! Can you point me in a direction? I wonder if she knows he's reaching out because of her moods.
Yeah, so we called your wife, Josh, and...
you're in big trouble, mister.
You're on restriction for the next 3 weeks. So there's quite a few things that we can talk about here. So let's talk about a few things here. So first of all, if someone's having trouble swallowing, that can be what they call esophageal dysphagia, and it can be a number of causes creating that. Was there footsie?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Kenny's dirty joking.
Okay. That happens a lot. We usually edit that out. Just, I know you guys think, well, Ken is always so sweet and she never does say anything.
No, she's not.
Like, there's usually like 18 minutes worth of show that is edited out by the time it reaches you guys. Okay, so one thing that can cause this is esophageal stricture, is what they call it, which can be like scarring or inflammation that can cause a narrowing in the esophagus. And you're correct to think that that is often caused by reflux issues. And people can also get like this esophageal ring, where just like a ring of tissue in the esophagus kind of narrows. And that can create problems with swallowing. And a lot of people even get that fixed surgically, and they seems like they come back every few years to get another ring cut because they're not fixing the actual reflux problem. But you're correct that it's probably caused by reflux, but you can't always fix reflux with just diet. Do you want to talk about the HCL factor of reflux and how most people, you know, it can also be a hiatal hernia that creates reflux. And so it can be a structural issue that's blocking this valve from closing, so we get reflux. But probably 95% of the cases, it's a lack of stomach acid. So let's hear from Will on that.
Yeah, hiatal hernias are a pain in the neck.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can have tests that are that look for that. And if you don't have one, awesome. If you do, you should probably try to find a good chiropractor locally that specializes in trying to like reposition it and do an actual physical adjustment on you. There's also a massage technique. If you go on YouTube, just Google or YouTube hiatal hernia massage technique.
Yeah, and we have that video in our free 4-week digestion course too.
Oh yeah, that's there too. But if that's not an issue, which you can rule out through testing, then the main thing you want to focus on is the fact that if you have enough acid in your stomach, in most people it will correctly trigger the valve of the stomach, the lower esophageal sphincter, the little muscle that connects the esophagus to the stomach, will be triggered when there's sufficient acid, and it will trigger it and seal it shut and tight like a furnace, so that everything in the stomach is trapped in there, and that's what you want for digestion to happen. If you don't have enough acid, then bacteria can live in the stomach and they create their own little fermentations like yeast in beer, and that creates bubbles, and that creates pressure, and that causes the valves of the stomach to slip open, and also the stomach content itself to expand through gaseous pressure. So then you get regurgitation of the contents of the stomach, and that regurgitated content can burn the esophagus because there's enzymes present in there, and there's also usually some amount of acid. Not enough acid to correctly trigger the valve to shut, but enough acid to cause some damage. So one thing that your wife could work on, Josh, is taking our digestive issues course and learning how to slowly ramp up usage of hydrochloric acid to build up the acid level in the stomach, and also maybe taking some antimicrobial products to help wipe out bacterial populations that might be present in the stomach, like the D-limonene, or even raw carrot and Swedish bitters and heartburn free. They're all options of what could be useful to help kill off the bacteria that's present. And then the HCL, ramping that up to trigger the valve to seal shut.
Yeah, so that's all good stuff. And I'm going to help Josh out here a little bit. And Josh, if your wife is listening now, why don't you send her to the kitchen to get something? Because we have a whole episode on acid reflux, and that could be very helpful in doing that. But Josh is saying, I'm going to kind of read in between the lines a little bit of what Josh is saying. And he's saying that it affects her mood, which is why he's reaching out. So if he's reaching out in an effort to improve that, it's probably really affecting him, that his wife is...
Sure, this isn't yo.
Yeah.
This guy is Josh.
Yeah. But I will say this, that if someone is having reflux type issues, we know they're not digesting their food correctly. So we know that that's 99% probably the case. And if they're not digesting their food correctly, they're not getting enough of the nutrients out of the food that they're eating for everything to be functioning properly.
I see where you're going.
Now, if you take that and you add in that somebody's a triathlete and they're working out for just hours at a time, there's a good chance that your wife could be a little bit nuts. And it's not that she's actually nuts. It's that there aren't enough resources for the brain to function properly, for emotional levels to be stable. And we have a lot of episodes where we talk about this fact as well. A lot of them, especially like the cravings one, and we have some on mood and something like that. But you have to understand that a lot of these mood things are not a personality thing. It's a nutrition thing. So what you look at is that, okay, there's an issue of reflux that makes my wife in a bad mood, but it may be magnified because there aren't enough resources for the brain to function properly, for signals to travel correctly. And in these cases, a person becomes distressed and it just affects their emotional state in a huge way. We should expand on this a little bit.
Yeah, and it'll really elevate cortisol, adrenaline, estrogen, especially the amount of stress she's putting on her body just from being a triathlete will do that.
Right.
But add to that the fact that she's probably really not great at digesting protein. So she's in a protein deficiency. That's going to change the whole ball game. Like, one, protein isn't available as like a big log on the fire for her metabolism to burn. So her blood sugar will be really unstable from that because she doesn't have proteins to draw from. She only has like the power gel she eats while she's running her travel.
Right, right.
So you need to have stable blood sugar for sanity because your brain really relies on glucose for it to run properly. But also, so do all of your cells and largely your muscles also. And when there isn't enough protein, your thyroid won't run right. And then you'll be stuck in this stress hormone metabolism. Instead of being stimulated by thyroid hormone, they'll be stimulated by like cortisol and adrenaline. And it's going to really change the way your cells work, but also really change your hormonal state. So your moods are obviously like big, like highly affected by a hormonal imbalance. So she needs more resources, and she probably needs a lot of help supporting her protein metabolism, which supports her endocrine system, which supports hormonal balance.
Yeah, so you see that there's a lot of layers to that problem that are possible. And if we totally lost you, that's okay. Just understand, you know, if you view it this way, and that bring in more resources that the body needs, then you can improve a lot of those hormonal issues and stress issues that are being created by that lack of resources that the body needs. And then the person can really turn things around. And then you know, keep in mind that we have to be, that we could be totally wrong about this situation. It could be just maybe Josh has horrible digestion and he's overreacting to her slight mood change. You know, who knows? But what I'm saying, yeah, take one for saying that up for the woman that's not
here. The electrolyte deficient.
Right. But what we see in most cases is that if someone has reflux, that they're having digestive issues. And when that's the case, they're not bringing in the resources from the food, and it really affects their emotional state. So if you can help her fix the digestion, which will fix the reflux in most cases, and get more nutrients in there, then if there is a thing that affects her mood, it goes from a 10 to a 3 or a 4. And so that's a lot more manageable for her to do, and it just makes life a little bit easier for her.
There's always divorce. Uh-huh. None of these things work.
Right. Yeah. It's a good thing we have Canada to help out.
I am just dishing out the good advice. Okay, Josh, good luck there. Okay, Pooja from Mumbai, India. The anabolic meal plan from your book doesn't work for me because I'm a pure vegetarian. Can you please suggest something? I read the Understanding Constipation and looks like I have an anabolic imbalance.
Yes. So, first of all, we have to consider the fact that, is Pooja, is that a guy or a girl name?
I don't know.
Usually a girl.
Is it usually a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah.
It's good we have Will. Will lived over in India for
like,
a year.
Yeah, for like 4 years.
Wow.
So, I think that we have to first realize that, well, the food is much different over there than it is here.
Yes.
You know, a lot of vegetarians here are missing a ton of nutrients, and they're eating all of this fake protein, soy, garbage, horrible stuff. And I don't know if that's the case in India. How does that go for vegetarians over there?
They do have, I don't think I saw tofu except in like the new agey kind of weird little bookshop cafe. But almost always they will eat cheese still and eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they won't eat eggs, but that's a pretty common thing. So you can totally have a healthy metabolism if you're allowing yourself cheese and eggs. Like, it gives you the other amino acids you need and saturated fats, so you can make it work, you know?
Yeah, I'm a fan of vegetarians that eat eggs. I really like it when they do that.
It helps a lot.
Yeah, so let's say maybe that Pooja is not willing to do that. That doesn't fit whatever reason that she moved to being a vegetarian. One thing to consider is that if you are not consuming protein and you are eating a lot more starches, because when you remove protein, you got to put something in there. So we see that a lot of vegetarians lean towards a lot more starches. So do you want to talk about how that could affect an anabolic imbalance and even expand on constipation?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of starches for anyone unless they're trying to gain weight, muscle and fat. Bodybuilders, I get it, but it's whether you're catabolic or anabolic, the worst thing if you're already too anabolic is that starches are very pro-anabolic, which is why they help you gain weight, like they help you build tissue. So that can really push you further in that direction. And I know from living there that a lot of times they have a lot of bread is a huge piece of the
pita.
Yeah, tons and different kinds of bread, like massive amounts of bread, and rice. Or also, like, bread is like the fork over there,
right?
And then rice is like a plate, you know, and then the food is on top of that, and they just, you know, so there's a lot of starches that are usually involved in Indian meals, and they also usually cook with horrible oils. Like, there's a lot of very cheap plant oils that they're, so even even if you were eating, you know, healthy animal meats, you would still have them cooked in these horrible oils, which are not good for anyone. So there's a lot of issues with like the regular sort of Indian diet, but if you're already too anabolic and you're eating these starches, which have really long chains and weird types of proteins in them that give people digestive issues, and they also push you more anabolic, it could be really problematic. And lo and behold, we see a lot of digestive problems in India, you know, there's just, in addition to like the bugs that foreigners get where you just have the runs for months and lose 20 pounds and have to move home early. You also see like
to move to India and lose 20 pounds.
Right. You also see like the regulars who live there, like some of my main clients who are in the super upper class. They're like, oh yeah, I get diarrhea usually once a month for like a week. Like, he's 70 years old. That's, like, just part of his life, just to get dysentery once
a month. Do they smoke a lot, too? Because I know, like, the Japanese, they smoke like freight trains.
There's more... They do smoke there, somewhat. They... More so, they chew... They chew this type of... they call it chot, which is like a tobacco with other weird herbs in it that gets you crazy high, and there's some weird fungus present in it that's not good. But it's kind of a... tangent from what we're talking about, but the basic diet that you're facing in India, there's a lot of things that just really don't work that well. So we'll see a lot of very underweight people in India, and then we'll see very overweight people. You don't see a ton of people that are just healthy and balanced, and fitness is not as big a part of their culture, but even still, there's a lot of very skinny, rail skinny people and obese people, and there's just a lot of reform that you're going to need to make to that diet to have it be really compatible with you as a Homo sapien.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the differences in cultures. Mm-hmm. I think I need to travel more. I've been to Torrance.
Yeah.
You've been to Venice?
No, Torrance down near Orange County.
Right.
But when you look at a meal plan, the anabolic meal plan contains, it can contain things like hard-boiled eggs, because those hard-boiled eggs, when an egg is cooked hard, it's pro-catabolic. So if you can include things like that, maybe that's beneficial, but reducing your starches is probably the biggest step and the most effective step that we see.
We are going to start doing a lot of food prep video demos and things like that when we come out with a Cook for Your Chemistry cookbook.
Is it going to be in Italy or someplace cool?
Sure, that would be a good idea.
I would love to do ones like go to Thailand, right? Like that. Okay. It'd be fun.
Okay, so Pooja, good luck, and let us know how it goes when you start adjusting some of those things with your food.
David from Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. Never mind. People get it.
Okay.
He's from France.
Okay. Are bananas allowed on the clean sweep? What about anything else not specifically allowed or forbidden? I have a lisp today.
It's fancy. Oh. You're using that instead of any variety of accents.
I mean, my electrolyte deficient is making me deficient in words and speech.
So the clean sweep is something in our Kick Your Fat in the Nuts book. It's chapter 9, and it's basically used for people who may be having some toxicity issues. And so it's basically for 30 days, you remove all of these things that are often problematic. So you're removing 100% of all processed food, all grains, all dairy, all legumes. So it's very paleo-ish. And basically, David is asking, are bananas allowed on there? And if you go to kickitinthenuts.com and you just search for clean sweep, you'll see an article there that is basically the whole chapter from the book. We put the whole chapter on there because so many people were asking about this. And you can read and better understand it there. And at the very bottom of that, I think the chapter is called Remove the Trouble, the new chapter 9. And at the very bottom, there's a link to a clean sweep food list that lists all of the foods that you can include in that. And we don't include bananas because most people that are doing a clean sweep and most people that are reading that book are overweight. And usually that has to do with some toxicity issues, is at least a contributing factor into some of that. And so one thought is that a lot of fruits are allowed in the clean sweep, but the banana seems to be the one that's the closest to a candy bar. And even if your body is processing that fructose differently, if a person is overweight, the liver is already likely having a hard time, so you don't want any type of overload. So it's not saying that you can never eat a banana again. It's saying that in this clean sweep, you're trying to take away everything that is any type of burden to the body or any type of the high end of anything going on, whether it be sugars, fructose, toxins, starches, whatever it is. You're trying to remove all of those exacerbated ends of the spectrum of all that stuff. So that's why you would leave bananas out during that period, so that you can kind of let your body come back down to its, hey, everything's easy going. I can manage all this stuff and take care of some things. And then a person can start to feel better. And the goal after the clean sweep is to put foods back in one at a time to see if there were things that were causing trouble to you, like grains is usually a big one for a lot of people.
Cool. And David, you know, for all of our Kick It Naturally listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial, so you can check out their service. Just to go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link, and you can download Tony's books, Kick Your Fat in the Nuts.
Right, for free, yeah.
For free. So you might want to try that. And if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches.
It's awesome.
It is. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens.
Because it's awesome.
That's right. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com. It is awesome.
Awesome.
And I've taken it, so any moron out there can take it. You may not be able to hold it in your brain for very long, but that's the good thing about it, because you can go back and look at it for life. It's online. It's not disappearing, and it's got great tools. You just type in one word if you're wondering about anabolic, and it highlights everything in the
workbook.
Yeah,
so it's a good reference.
It's great. It's a great reference.
I think we finished the show.
We finished the show?
Maybe.
We finished the show.
Good job.
Cool.
Okay, we're done talking now.
All right, so if you want to learn about... One more commercial. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com or head on over to Will Schmitz, mybodyofknowledge.net. Check out his website and see all the great blogs and exercises and stuff that he's got going on over there.
Breakfast Club.
Right on.
Judd Nelson. Love you.